good morning once again to Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. Thank you very much for joining us, Seamus. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Greg. Yeah, nice to be here.
How is life?
Great, yeah. Kept on the move, yeah. It's moving on very rapidly. I don't believe where this year has gone now. We're well into June. And
they all seem to fly at this stage.
It just keeps turning rougher, more on teal. Yeah,
there's good weather forecast for later this month. And if people haven't got in early, they're going to be out footing the turf and getting it ready to bag and take home. You're still allowed to do it to some extent, though you can't sell it, can you? The European Commission, though, has taken Ireland to Europe's highest court over the alleged lack of enforcement of EU rules when it comes to peat cutting. Is this just a process, or could this have ramifications?
I think that's a reasonable question. The ramification side of it is for sure. We might have referenced this back a couple of years ago, in 2022, anyway, it got a lot of airtime whenever new regulations were brought in at that point under the smokeless fuel type of scheme to ban the selling commercially of peats cut from bogs. And a lot of people actually took exception to that, naturally so, because these are traditional turbary type rights and have been practiced for many years in rural Ireland, like all across the Western Seaboard and down the Midlands, etc. So at that stage, though, the government were obviously looking to the bigger picture, because the EU had already issued what was called a formal notice in 2019 about environmental impact assessments that are required in respect of any of these type of developments and planning permissions, etc. So they weren't happy with the manner in which the directives coming from the EU about the environment were being enforced over here. So that was 19. Then they issued a formal opinion, and now, lo and behold, only yesterday, it's in the mainstream news that they're taking Ireland to the ECJ. So I don't think it's shadow boxing at all. Back in the early 2000s, you will remember this. There was, there was a wind farm situation over in the west of Ireland in Galway, and there was a peat landslide of some description. And the European Commission looked into that at the time and, in fact, found that there wasn't a proper environmental impact assessment in respect of that particular bog done. And they fined Ireland an extraordinary sum. I think in the region of somewhere around the seven odd million or so, or 5 million, and they were also charging them at that stage 15,000 per breach per day. That was a big headline back then, you'll recall it, right? And before that tariff was met, that had ran up to 17 million euro, which had to come out of the coffers. Now, I know that that's not highlighted now, but this is where this could lead to next. And it's quite embarrassing. And then if we try to balance it, though, like the ordinary person who has a turbary right, who has gone to the bog for years traditionally and cut their peats, I would be a great supporter of that, and that being allowed to continue. You're not allowed to sell it, but you can give it to somebody for free. On very small scales, I believe you could sell it locally as such, but not in shops or on a commercial forefront. But what the European Commission are saying is that areas that are under 50 hectares, that they're not, the correct environmental assessments are not being obtained and the correct planning permissions are not being obtained. So there's going to be a ramification, is this knock-on effect down the line.
The thing is,
state, not the individual.
Yes, but we pay for them by hook or by crook. But what I don't fully understand is we've seen our peat imports increase dramatically since the restrictions were put on this peat and the sale of peat. Most of it comes in from Germany, much of it from Northern Ireland. We also import from Latvia, and it is actually used for burning peat briquettes, etc. And of course, the likes of mushroom farmers and others would use it for their means as well. So What I don't fully understand is us being taken to court for the harvesting of this, even though it's of cultural importance as much as anything else. Yet we imported 1,000 tons of peat in 2024 from Egypt. What, to burn or to put on the land from Egypt? Not, and that's actually shipping it up here, and yet we're being taken to court for cutting our own turf and our own bugs. I don't understand.
It's a point. You can get some of our, what is it, 14 European representatives to bring up in the European Parliament. But I think that you've just overlooked maybe the reasoning behind that is, and just I referenced it maybe at the very start. My understanding is that fuel is smokeless fuel. And that is that there is a distinction there. And this was why the legislation was extended in 2022 to capture that and capture the sale of that and to rule out what is potentially a pollutant. But while the smokeless fuel, fossil fuels are as well in everybody's view with regard to the climate, but they don't infringe the European legislation. That's my understanding of that position.
A caller says, "Hi Greg, can you please ask Seamus, if a person stroke nephew who's set to inherit a property, but that person passes away before inheriting from the owner, does the property go straight to the nephew's next of kin or the owner's next of kin? What scenario would unfold there?" Right, so the house has been left in a will to a nephew. We'll just stick with nephew. That nephew dies before the house has been transferred to him. He's predeceased, obviously, the owners. Where does the house go? You muted there, Seamus. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Yeah.
What?
Not muted.
It's an interesting question, Greg. Yeah. And what the caller does not reference at all, which I think is probably appropriate, just to mention that if this is a situation where an individual has made arrangements, well, nothing happens until after their day and pass away. So we are a bit presumptuous here. Because we're saying that obviously the testator or testatrix remains alive at the moment. So all this could change and they could update their arrangements and the caller would not have any interest or perhaps in the estate at all. So that's kind of a presumption that they're taking. And on that basis, they're asking, well, if the nephew that was going to inherit has passed away, well, in that situation, it's my opinion then that if that was the bequest and there is no what's called a gift over so in the will, so if it was left to that nephew, but should that nephew predeceased, it's then bequeathed to somebody else, that will still take effect. If that is not the situation and there's no gift over of that bequest in itself, then in my opinion, then the doctrine of lapse would come into play and then that would fall back into the estate to be dealt with as part of the residue.
Should a solicitor carry on making a will with a patient who's just been told they have cancer, or should the client be told to take a number of weeks to think about it? If that will was made in haste, can it be objected to? There's a lot of presumptions in there by reading it first time out.
Yeah, there is, and there might even be a slight nuanced inference in it, maybe slightly. Which I wouldn't like to sort of go into any further, but in these situations, they're delicate. People, the person may be in a vulnerable position. The professional person attending them, the solicitor, in those circumstances, is very likely, I would consider, to request a certificate of capacity that they are fully capable and able to make decisions dealing with their estate and to put their arrangements in place. Now, once that would be to hand, I don't see anything again reason for not taking their instructions, whether it be in a hospital situation or outside it. My preference would be outside it, of course, but sometimes we are not given that luxury, and you have to respond to a situation. And remember this and keep it in mind, it's the individual's call themselves. It's not somebody else's call to say whether they're right or whether they're capable. So, but to give effect to their instructions so that later they will be implemented or not, and not maybe challenged, or if challenged, at least you can resist the challenge, I think that you would probably be likely to get a certificate of competence from the treating
doctor. If you said that to me and I says, excuse me, I might have cancer, but I can make my own decisions, I find that quite insulting. I'll go to another solicitor. In other words, that cert of competence, I mean, you could make it an obligation, but it's not legally, you're not legally obliged to. So you just give advice to say, look, this would create, any, this would help offset any potential problems in the future.
Yes, of course, Greg, but that's not the way this question has been phrased, to be fair.
True. You're right.
I don't believe that at all for one minute. I'm interpreting what the way it has been put here. And it could be any illness, like they're talking about a cooling off period, we call it. I never heard of such a thing in my life, but that's what's actually stated, to take a number of weeks to think about it. In relation to yourself raising that point too, fairly enough, but what if the individual has, unfortunately, a tumour on the brain and they're not in a situation that they can't communicate readily or easily, but they're fully compos mentis and have all their faculties about them? So that could arise. It might be unlikely, but it could arise in this type of scenario. But I think that the question is really, the emphasis is on this, the professional shouldn't take instructions. They should be allowed to cool off because they're not well at that particular time. And I don't buy into that at all. And that's really why I'm suggesting that if that's the type of approach being taken, I think maybe a certificate to the effect that the individual is fully competent to make their arrangements would assist. But
You're taking an inference from the question, and I'm taking an inference from your answer, and I hope you all align.
But I would also say this, that, and this is just speaking from my own professional experience, I would make an assessment of the individual myself, having been around long enough. And if I had any doubts at all in that regard, that's the route I would take. Now, if I did not, and the person was very candid and straight up, and there was no issue whatsoever, regardless of their ailment, I have no difficulty in taking those instructions. And if they discommode somebody down the line, so be it.
Yeah, okay. This is an interesting question, and it might sort of lean into guard of discretion. I don't know. I'll be interested in your answer. I'd like to NCT my car that has been in the shed now for over a year, and I'd like to know, is it legal to drive it to the NCT centre without insurance? Sorry. Is it legal to drive it to the NCT centre with insurance but without NCT and tax? The car was not driven since its last test. Many thanks.
We've done a few questions in our time, Greg, and we've never come up with one like this before. The caller seems to be between the rock and a hard place in some respects. It would be my view, though, that there would be a certain amount of discretion allowed. I think even technically, if they're on their way to the NCT centre and do not have an NCT cert, I think that, and they have documentation to establish or prove that that is where they're going at a particular appointed time, I think that that would be seen to be a reasonable defence. Otherwise, they cannot obtain the NCT. And secondly, there are an awful lot of vehicles who have failed the NCT and have to have certain works done and are still being driven around on the road awaiting a reset. And that's the system we're in. So I think there has to be flexibility, a bit of practicality and some common sense. But I would also stress to the caller, I think the most important aspect of this is that the vehicle, the car, is insured and also it should be taxed and to be on the road. But certainly the insurance in order. And if they have the test booked, that they keep the documentation, perhaps maybe in the car or whatever, so that if stopped, they can easily explain the situation. And I think I would like to think anyway that if a guard was at a checkpoint, that would be a good, rational and acceptable explanation.
It's an interesting point you make, because I know firsthand, not myself, of people who have been given, red NCT failures where the car has been deemed not actually roadworthy and hopped in that same vehicle and headed off again.
Another point which is quite interesting, that there is an aspect of a dangerous driving charge, that if the vehicle is such if it's in such dangerous condition that should not be on the road, a road traffic charge could follow that, and it could even give rise to a dangerous driving type charge. So that could be very, very serious indeed, and I would certainly have to caution against that. But the caller here is trying their best. I think they're saying, look, the vehicle's been off. I have to get an NCT.
Yeah.
I can't drop it in there on a parachute. You know, I'm going to have to drive it in.
Well, there's plenty of boys around will tow it in for you on a wee flatbed, but I do understand exactly what you're saying. This is
And they could also be in a remote area. You know,
exactly,
Donegal, you know, there's a few NCT centres at different areas, but for some people it's quite a distance
That's
to get there.
That's quite true, actually.
And the chance or the expense of towing it in would not be practical at all.
Exactly, because £200-£300, you're perfectly right there. This happens more often, I think, than it would certainly come up in an item like this, but it happens to people individually, and I think it happens very, very often. And if those people came together, we'd see the full extent of what's going on. But this caller says, I booked a hotel in Dublin for a wedding. All good so far. It's booked since January. Can the hotel cancel my booking for no apparent reason? It's clear to the listener that it is to resell because of a huge concert that's on in Dublin, and they can get more money, obviously, then for the room. So what are my legal rights in that regard?
Yeah, it's very interesting that they have deduced, it seems, that it has been sold for an alternative reason, you know, and been cancelled for that reason. I'd like to tease that out as to how that information is available to them. Perhaps maybe they've checked out and seen that there is.
Well, say, for instance, next Wednesday night, I have to stay in Dublin next Wednesday night, and the hotel rooms are €800 or €900. Bon Jovi are playing in Dublin on Wednesday night, so it can't be a coincidence.
Yes, I would accept that. And in dealing with the query, I think the caller has grounds for a breach of contract type claim here against the provider, if that is the basis for the cancellation. That is not justifiable, and I think that would not stand up. What I would suggest, though, is this, when booking weddings and getting into very, very significant outlay, my understanding, with some slight experience, is that there is a deposit payable at the time of the booking. They want to check, though, what is the cancellation rights and what is the policy with regard to cancellation? And is there any limit, have the hotel any limit on their liability? Because this could very well arise with regard to whenever they're making the booking in the small print, and that's why I've always recommended that they check such detail out, because this is a very big exposure financially and obviously terrible disappointment. Now, in contract, they, in my view, should and could be put into the same position as they were before that happened. There might also be some type of claim for general damages in respect of all the grief that it has caused. So I don't believe that excuse is justifiable, and I think that the caller would have grounds to take the matter further and maybe engage their legal representative on it. But it still leaves a sour taste about the wedding, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, of course. Last one for now. I have a lot of land that runs along a main road. Cars crash into it now and again and break my fencing wire. A car crashed recently and broke the wire. A recovery company came in and removed the vehicle and didn't inform me that my fencing wire was down. I use it to keep my animals in. Who would be responsible if these animals strayed onto the road and there was a collision?
Again, out in rural Ireland, we see this quite often. But this caller had there's kind of two strands to this. Like the first aspect of it, it seems that they rode their fencing has been demolished by a car, and that would give rise to the caller having a cause of action against the driver of the vehicle or whatever for the damage done. And I've seen that many times. So that's the first aspect of it, and they should investigate and pursue that, follow that up themselves. Now, then the responsibility kind of moves a little bit, because at that point, if they have animals in that particular area, in that field, there's an obligation on them under legislation to fence their animals in. So they should restore their fencing and make a claim against the third party. If they don't do that, well then, and it's traditionally fenced, well then that could be a situation and their animals stray out onto the road and cause an accident. In that situation, I'd be sorry to say that then the caller could be left in some jeopardy. So that's the rationale behind it. If they take reasonable steps to keep their land fenced in, the obligation is on owners of farming livestock to keep them within their own cartilage and their own boundary. But the fence being knocked down, I think, gives a rise to a cause of action against the motor vehicle, the driver.
If my memory serves me correctly, it became apparent through a number of appeals on Community Garda information that the person who left the road and crashed into the fence and then had their vehicle towed away as if nothing had happened, they are guilty, potentially, of leaving the scene of a road traffic collision as well, because they've damaged somebody else's property. You can't just scoop the car up and off you go.
No. That would give it... The aspect I was dealing with was the civil aspect.
No, I understand. No, this is...
Certainly a road... Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just more as a...
Road traffic legislation. Yeah. You should stay at the scene, identify themselves, let the party know I'm responsible for that. That's my car. Exchange the details. Not necessary, maybe if there's no injuries involved, for the Gardaí to be there, but exchange the details and have it recorded and move on from that. Otherwise, yes, they could face a prosecution in the district court. Yes.
I just thought, of course, it was not to question your answer. It was actually just an interesting thing that maybe people don't realise. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors, Letterkenny, Remalton. What do you do in your spare time, Seamus, to wind down from all of these legal matters?
I go for the odd walk, you know.
Yes.
And I like to try to stay fit.
You wouldn't spoil a good walk with a golf club, no?
I used to be able to do that, Greg, and ever since I suppose the last two decades or so, the 19th hole was always a draw, and time could move on in there, and if the company was good, it could be cut down to more than the half day that's supposedly allocated. But I am very enthusiastic about golf. It was a day I used to play a good bit of tennis too, but
yes.
And still would like to hit a ball. So I'm trying to keep energetic, sure, you might as well.
Lovely stuff. All right, another golf major to occupy my weekend on my backside next weekend. All right, listen, Seamus, thank you very much indeed. Lovely to talk to you as always. By the way, just to let people know, they can obviously track you down in the physical offices in Letterkenny and Remalton, but if they want to engage with Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors, how can they do so wirelessly?
Just keep it simple, Greg. Gunn.ie, Donegal Solicitor.ie will get it as well. And we were there as of yesterday, so hopefully that'll remain.
You keep paying the hosting charges, you'll be grand. That's Seamus Gunn there. Shannon Wilkin is with me for her Scroll Patrol. Morning to you.
Hello, Greg.
Great to have you with us. Nice bit of enthusiasm there in your voice. Lily Allen has an Irish connection. A lot of people will be listening going, well, who the hell's Lily Allen?
Lily Allen, so
well,
best known for her song Smile, probably.
Yes.
But she was in the news.